Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Whenever and wherever you're listening to this podcast, you are very welcome. Welcome to Rugby News, the podcast about our town, our people. We'll kick off with a roundup of local news, news local to rugby, with the help of the excellent local newspapers, the Rugby Observer and the Rugby Advertiser. In this week's show, podcast number 13, released on Friday the 14th of February, we hear about major investments in St Cross Hospital, new owners for the Dobbies Garden Centre, and make the case for the Gibbet Hill improvements. I've also got a what's on in rugby to attract you into the town centre and savour its delights. And as promised last week, I caught up with Councillor Jerry Rudehouse, leader of the Liberal Democrats on the borough and, I think, the county council. And in a fascinating interview, he unravels the whole business of these local government changes to create unitary authorities, what it's all about, how it can affect us in rugby, and why he favours the idea, whichever way it all goes, of rugby ending up with a town council. And so, without further ado, here's our news. I was still hoping for an update on the aftermath of the Hoskin Ward protests across town last November, and I got news of a major, major investment in our St Cross Hospital. Multi-million pound plans, described as exciting, have been announced to build four new theatres, two 24-bed wards and 12 recovery wards at Rugby's Hospital of St Cross, having the effect of increasing the number of operations and reducing waiting times. An application was made by UHCW to the Borough Council, who, unsurprisingly, have approved the proposals. It will see the introduction of new services, such as keyhole abdominal surgery, plus an expansion in spinal surgery, inpatient gynaecology, hip and knee replacements, and breast surgery. Professor Andy Hardy, the Trust's chief executive, said, "The development is a key priority for the Trust as we set out in our organisational strategy in 2022. Building a new inpatient ward and theatre facility is the first step in an ambitious long-term vision for the site, ensuring the Hospital of St Cross plays a key role in improving the experiences of our patients and staff and driving down waiting times. The theatre and ward complex will be set over three stories, with the ground floor containing the operating theatres, the first floor housing two wards and the second floor including the plant to meet mechanical and electrical requirements. A new staff car park is also planned, creating more spaces elsewhere for patients and visitors. The rooftop will feature new solar panels, providing renewable energy, and car parking will contain electrical car charging points. Is this the power of protest, I wonder? Or should we have read the Trust's organisational strategy more thoroughly in 2022? Whatever, it's great news. Last Tuesday, it was announced that British Garden Centres have taken over from Dobbies as owners and operators of the Straight Mile Garden Centre. The centre, to be known as Rugby Garden Centre, will temporarily close to do some work around the place, but aims to reopen in early March, complete with the existing team of staff. They'll be restocking and refurbishing to ensure the centre's continued success in its local community. The restaurant will be renovated and a carvery added, creating 12 to 15 jobs. The garden centre will also recruit 8 to 10 seasonal and permanent staff. They see huge potential in this site, and we, of course, are you ready? Hope that they flourish. You'll know the heartache of trying to navigate the Gibbet Hill roundabout, especially at any time near to rush hour. Well, Midlands Connect, the sub-national transport body for the region, is trying to build a case for government to help fund works to improve the infamous Gibbet Hill junction, where the A426 to Lutterworth crosses the A5. Midland Connect say the case needs a boost from local businesses to get the go-ahead. They say the roundabout is at critical mass and needs urgent attention to prevent increasing congestion, and they need evidence from businesses to describe the challenges in a bit more detail, especially how improvements would support their operations. The roundabout has been identified as the third worst bottleneck along the whole A5 corridor and is obviously struggling to cope with the 7,000 vehicles which pass through it every day. Things will only get worse as more housing and industrial developments are built. So, if you work in a business that's affected by the noose that is Gibbet Hill Roundabout, get your people to contact Midlands Connect. Midlands Connect. Raise your voice, get heard. Make change. News from the blighted HS2. Yes, the HS2 is beginning after years of devastation, upset and mayhem around here and on its route between nearly London and Birmingham, brackets not Manchester, close brackets. It's beginning to achieve a few milestones along its route. A green bridge that spans the HS2 near Kenilworth will be open to traffic in the autumn. It's the Stoneleigh Road Bridge and will consist of a dual carriageway for vehicles and provide two nature corridors, giving safe passage for wildlife to cross the railway. There will eventually be 15 other similar green bridges on the route. It's 33 metres in length and 42 metres wide. It was started in October 23. 2 years later, hey presto, it will be open to road traffic, if not to any trains. If you're green, please don't listen to this next bit too closely. It required nearly 2,000 cubic metres of concrete to be poured just to create the deck slab, let alone the parapets, foundations and other structures. Along the whole of the line, HS2 is building more than 500 bridging structures, including over 50 major viaducts. These will stretch for a combined total of 15 kilometres across valleys, rivers, roads and floodplains. Sorry to ruin your breakfast. Well done to the Red Lion in Kilsby for scooping the Traveller's Choice Award by TripAdvisor for 2024. The accolade places the pub among the top 10% rated restaurants and pubs worldwide, as determined by customer reviews and ratings on the TripAdvisor platform. The award, which celebrates businesses that consistently deliver fantastic experiences to diners around the globe, is based on a year's worth of positive feedback from visitors. General Manager Alistair Murray-Nichols said, "We extend our gratitude to our loyal customers and dedicated team for their continued support and look forward to welcoming even more visitors in the coming months." Well, well done again to the Red Lion in Kilsby. And if you pop in, people, drop me a line and tell me what you think at simon.rugby.news@gmail.com. Warwickshire County Council, only days after promoting National Storytelling Week, have announced library cuts. They plan to end the Sunday opening of Warwickshire libraries and make others volunteer run. For the sake of clarity, they currently have 30 libraries listed on the County Council's website, 12 of which are volunteer-led. Their medium-term financial strategy, that's the Council's financial framework for the next 5 years, includes the assumption of almost £80 million worth of savings, achieved either through cuts, efficiencies or income-generating schemes. And they're currently proposing to review libraries in Rugby, Leamington and Nuneaton, currently open for 4 hours on Sundays, with the aim of clawing back £50,000 and saving another £100,000 from a targeted expansion of the community-managed library network from April 2027. Specifics of what may come have yet to be announced, but Councillor Jonathan Chilvers argued that libraries offer amazing value for money, acting as social glue across our county for what is actually a very small amount of money in the larger scheme of things. And in a separate but linked story, the county have announced the introduction of two new electric mobile libraries. They're bright and colourful, you can't miss them, and they replace previous diesel ones. They're similar in size and offer the same reliable service and provide the same number of books, including plenty of new titles suitable for all ages. The county's mobile library vehicles make 250 stops across the county over a four-week schedule. Both of these vehicles are fitted with a lift, as well as a low entrance of just two small steps and a ramp at the rear for wheelchair users, improving accessibility for customers. The new vehicles are, of course, more environmentally friendly and sustainable, producing zero emissions and reducing local air and noise pollution. To find out where the mobile library service stops, ring the following number, 0300 555 8171. That's 0300 555 8171. So that was a roundup of the local news stories about our rugby town, and I'm indebted to the excellent local newspapers, Rugby Observer and the Rugby Advertiser, for all their help. And hey, for even more detail and even more news stories as they happen, go to their websites or follow them on their Facebook pages. Let's have a look at the attractions across rugby that might, over the next couple of weeks, seduce you to come into town and see what's going on. Let's go to Rugby Theatre first. And on the 14th and 15th of February, there's a film showing. Yes, Rugby Theatre show films as well as wonderful live stage offerings. The facilities for showing films are amazing. Great screen, wonderful sound, and most importantly, there's no adverts. If it says it's going to start at 7:30, it does. Well, the film this weekend is We Live in Time. And the show on Friday is at 7:30. And on Saturday, the 15th February, at 5 o'clock in the afternoon and 8 o'clock in the evening. The film is about Almut, played by Florence Pugh, and Tobias, played by Andrew Garfield. And they're brought together on a surprise encounter that changes their lives. Through snapshots of their life together, falling for each other, building a home, becoming a family, a difficult truth is revealed that rocks its foundation. As they embark on a path challenged by the limits of time, they learn to cherish each moment of the unconventional route their love story has taken in filmmaker John Crowley's decade-spanning, deeply moving romance. Let's move to the Macready now, and there are three events in the next fortnight that I want to point out to you. Friday the 14th, that's today, they have Gin and Jive Valentine's special, and by the look of it, there are two tickets available. And on Saturday the 15th, they offer Hidden Powers for one night only. You can experience an evening of magic, mind-reading and unbelievable trickery in the latest show from rising star Angus Baskerville. Angus is an award-winning magic circle magician based near Stratford-on-Avon, and in 2024 took his first show to the Edinburgh Fringe with great success, receiving five-star reviews and selling out shows left, right and centre. That's on the Macready stage on Saturday 15th of February. Tickets are £10 or £12. And by the look of it, there's still some left. And on Sunday afternoon, the 16th of February, with a 2:30 curtain up, it's Raoul Dahl and the Imagination Seekers. It runs for about 65 minutes, and it's apparently a wondrous and engaging way to spend a Sunday afternoon, theatre and education all wrapped up into one charming, magical package. That was some audience feedback from a previous performance. All around the world, Raoul Dahl's words are disappearing, not only from books, but children's minds too. Now only a secret organisation known as the Ancient Guild of Tale Tenders can save the stories, and they need your help. Join Terry Tibblestick and his assistant Brenda Bogg as they reveal their discovery of the missing words, sparking danger that they are being eaten by the dreaded Werble Gobblers. Especially made for ages 5 and up, the show develops both creative and literary skills through performance, games and creative play. Sounds like a gas. That's 2:30 on Sunday the 16th. Roald Dahl, The Imagination Seekers at Macready Theatre. And as we get to the top of Sheep Street, we find ourselves at CV22. And tonight, that's Valentine's night, there's Dave Largy, as trailed last week. He's the UK's number one tribute to the undisputed King of Soul, Barry White. And he takes you on a journey through those classic hits. On Saturday the 15th, the Duke's Jetty, ever popular local band, the Duke's Jetty, return to Inside the 22 for another night of classic sing-along anthems and dance floor fillers. Sunday, there's the Jazz Club, the area's finest jazz musicians doing what they do so well, whatever that is. And then next Saturday, the 22nd, Thea Watson, the BBC introducing singer-songwriter and recording artist, 2023 Rugby's Got Talent runner-up as well, will be performing live, providing the perfect soundtrack to your Saturday night. And next Sunday night, the 23rd, there's a quiz night, super fun quiz night hosted by Quizmaster Paul. Grab your friends and put your music and general knowledge to the test. Loads going on at CV22. Skip along now to what the Ben Hall has to offer. And on Sunday the 16th of February, they present Elvis, The Ultimate Experience, performed by multi-award-winning Elvis tribute artist Ben Thompson with a full band that takes you through all the eras of the King of Rock and Roll. That should be something amazing. And let's pop in now to Quigley's while we've still got some stamina. And they favour beer, rugby and music. There seems to be lots going on tonight, Friday the 14th, 0 hours in the early session at 6 o'clock, followed at 9.45 by Filthy Luca. Saturday the 15th is Paula Flynn in the first sessions at 6 o'clock with traditional Irish music at 9 o'clock. Next Thursday the 20th, Jessie May at 9 o'clock. And Friday the 21st of February, the early session is Dez at 6 o'clock, followed by Blues Extra, the main event, at 9.45. Loads going on there, never a dull moment. OK, there's a lot of talk about these unitary authorities that central government want to create across the whole of England and, I believe, Wales. So I spoke to one of the key players in how it will affect Rugby Town, Councillor Jerry Rudehouse. It was a pleasure recently to spend some time with Councillor Jerry Rudehouse, speaking for the Liberal Democrats as a councillor at both borough and county levels. Born in Yorkshire, he came to rugby as a young schoolboy, his father a vicar and his mother a teacher and later deputy head at Tower Lodge School in Bilton. He's had a life in agricultural engineering and long been interested in global events. Was a protester at Greenham Common, even being detained at Upper Heyford Air Force Base, slung in the back of a Black Mariah and sent back to rugby for his troubles. This led to an interest in community politics through the Liberal Party, and that's about how you do things in the community, driving things forward. He'd say that's not about taking the glory, but what you can do to help local action. He has for many years now served on the Borough and County Council, leading and growing the Liberal Democratic representation. Last May's local elections produced a swing to Labour, but not quite enough to have an overall majority on the Borough Council. And so, as the leader of the 9 Liberal Democrats, Jerry works very closely with Michael Moran, leader of the local Labour councillors and in the chair as leader of the Borough Council, on the basis of a confidence and supply agreement.
So both parties agree to a set of rules of how they will operate. They still retain their independence, but on certain items, what's called the corporate strategy or the budget, we'll try and vote together on those if we come to agreement. So this gives a steadyship and a steady sign of which way we're going, really. So the leader at the moment is Michael Moran, and myself, we work quite closely through lots of things going forward. And we're quite open with each other. So if we need to talk about other things, we're not about sitting in an office, we'll go into town and sit in a coffee shop and have a chat and meet up and do that way. And what I've tended to find over all these years, it's not really about the party politics. If you take all that away, But is it about the chemistry between individual people? And if those individual people get on, you can actually achieve a lot, regardless of politics. I hope yeah, that we actually do quite like each other and we respect each other's views. So it works. And for me, that has to override the best for what we need for rugby and the future of rugby.
So, though the Borough Council is officially in no overall control, the Lib Dems and Labour councillors have a cooperative arrangement, and the two leaders, Gerry and Michael Moran, work together well to keep things moving in a clear direction and at pace. Beyond the day-to-day cajoling and controlling the work of the council officers, the two biggest one-off projects that they're focused on are delivering the long-awaited town centre regeneration and how to get the best out of the local government reorganisation for Rugby Town and its people. We'll look at where we are with the town centre regeneration next week. But for now, let's focus on all this talk of unitary authorities.
So the government has decided that there's going to be local government reorganisation, and that's the base camp. So the government of the day has decided that something is going to change. So a unitary would mean that all the local councils, that's Warwick, Stratford, Rugby, Nuneaton, North Warwickshire and Warwickshire County Council, disappear. And then a new council is created on what they call vesting day. You might call it Warwickshire Authority. But there are options around. People are talking about splitting Warwickshire in half, so you have a north and a south.
Mm-hmm.
What that does to you in rugby when you live in the east is an interesting one. Or have just one single unit which sits on the what they call the footprint of the Warwickshire geography. And of course, if you're a councillor down in Stratford or in Warwick or in North Warwickshire or Nuneaton, you probably favour the two-split decision, which leaves Warwickshire rugby councillors in an interesting position, really. So, I mean, it's long been known that my favourite view, which is against colleagues of mine down south, is for a single Warwickshire on a single geography. And there's a number of reasons that are sat behind that. At the moment, we have an adult social care and a children's social care services based on Warwickshire. And it would mean that if you split the county up into those two factions, it's unclear what would happen to those two services for a start. And what's happened elsewhere, if you look at Northamptonshire, they've been put into trusts and run by trust, which means you lose all democratic control then of how those mental health services and adult social care services are operated. We also have Warwickshire Fire and Rescue Service, which is based as our own fire service for the county at the moment. That would most definitely be put into probably the West Midlands. And the other bit, which I haven't really had clear answers to, it's all the back office stuff, HR, computer systems, all this sort of stuff. If you're having two local authorities, north and south, are they going to be operating the same systems or different systems, which is all added cost at the moment with if you have a single footprint running all those adult services, children's services, school services, strategic planning, fire services and the rest of it, you won't have to split any of that up. So it makes sense to me, sitting in the east, as it would, that for rugby, it's best if we go to that single geography and then do what's called a parishing, where everything gets parished. So rugby would then have its own town council with devolved powers to it and some devolved money to keep looking after its parks and developing the town centre and other works around that. So at the end of the day, there's two rules of thumb. You have to think what's going to be best for the residents. Yeah, what's the fairest services that they're going to get? So what's the delivery they're going to get? Because they've got to pay the council tax at the end of the day. And the second one for me then is what's the fairest deal for rugby and the rugby residents out of all that? And if it does go down the route of unitary, I think we're probably better having a town council. You then have councillors who will be very close to the community. But we want the devolved powers and some of the devolved monies to ensure that we can keep our parks and areas in the town really top-notch as they are. But what we've got to get right before that and get security on is actually the regeneration of the town centre.
We'll look at the town centre regeneration plans next week. But just to recap, the current borough council has responsibilities spread across many square miles, with Rugby Town itself simply being a more densely populated part of the borough's responsibilities. The resources at the current town hall are spread across the broad borough area, and the focus of its activities is also that broad. How much more satisfactory it would be for the town itself if its governance was clearly focused on the town itself. How much easier it would be to refine and develop its own sense of itself and deal with matters specific to the town. Going to a town council model with sufficient resources and appropriate powers, reporting directly to a single county-wide authority who deliver the broader services, seems to me to be a fine state of affairs. It stands to reason, doesn't it?
It does for me, but not everybody sees it that way. But if you want to build, I think, a greater sense of community and pride in the town than what we've got, you know, I think that is one of the mechanisms that we need to do. If you live in a... speaking to somebody earlier around villages, they live in a village and they sit on the parish council and they work with that parish council a lot around the green agenda and things. And they were talking about the leadership that people get from the parish council in relation to the village and the community and the pride that they build in and around that. And I was saying it's more difficult in Rugby because we're an urban area and we don't have that sense, because the borough council, of course, works from Wolvie all the way down towards Southam, you know, across to Dunchurch and everywhere else, including the town. So it becomes difficult to get that sense from around the town itself and for the communities that live in and around the town. So the town council, and Shrewsbury and places and towns like that, they have those greater senses of community. So Shrewsbury didn't have a town council until Shropshire was made into a unitary, and then everything was turned into parished areas like Shrewsbury.
Well, we do have town councils now already in Warwickshire, don't we?
Yeah, so we have Warwick, Kenilworth, Leamington, you know, Stratford, and up towards, you know, Ulster, Coleshill and that. If you go to Wiltshire and look at their models and what they've done there, they've got some very good local devolved powers and local town councils that are developing. And if you move down towards Somerset and Devon and that way, you'll see some really good models there.
So a town council is a proven concept, if set up right, that can only be a good thing for rugby. So we can foster a feeling of what it is to be a rugbyan, developing a sense of place and helping to become a stronger community.
My wife and I, we've always noticed whenever you go up into town, you always meet people you know. So it may seem a big town, but it's a small town feel. Mm. And it's that for me, needs to be fostered even more. You know, there is a vibrant art scene, you know, Art in the Alex and all these other organisations, and there's voluntary organisations all over the place. And I think things like a town council can give that coalescing, can give that leadership for those smaller urban areas, of those groups to come together. And surely, you know, we talk a lot about St Cross and A&Es and all the rest of it. We need to be able to fight for those services. So we do need that localised voice, which is going to go back to all these bigger organisations that are, you know, just think that running things on a bigger scale is the best thing. Well, perhaps that's not always the best way to operate. So I'm a firm believer in, yes, you do need to take strategic decisions. You do need to know where that motorway is going to go, or the railway. But at the same time, for communities and people and where they live and the place they live, that can only really be done at a local level, and you need to either empower people to do that and help people to do that. And that's the bit about the community politics, taking it full circle, that as a politician, you shouldn't be the politician to tell people what to do, but you should be there to enable people and help them open the doors if they need the doors opening. Mm. And if you can, you know, support them on that route to do that, that's what it should be. So, you know, that's what I see my job as, really.
So, with Jerry's lifelong experience in community politics and with a town council more able to empower people directly to get involved and positively influence the place where they live, we could, yes, develop greater pride in rugby. Meanwhile, the unitary authority, more of a strategic body planning for and implementing strategic infrastructure and services. Sounds good to me. Really interesting to hear what makes Jerry Roodhouse tick and how he is applying his many years of elected experience in the service of the people of rugby, helping to make the best out of this local government reorganisation and, as we'll hear next week, taking the opportunity to ensure a regeneration of the town centre that we can all feel proud of. Okay, we've pretty much reached the end of this podcast and thank you so much for staying with it. I publish it once a week every Friday morning, so if you click follow next to Rugby News, or one word, on any of the podcast platforms, you should get a notification when a new one drops, so make sure you do follow. I hope you liked what you heard, found it useful, and you want more. And if you did, others will too. So share the news and spread the word by sharing the Facebook posts and telling your friends about Rugby News, or one word. Any ideas to make it better, of course, let me know. After all, it is your town, your people. Reach me on email simon.rugby.news@gmail.com. OK, I've been Simon. Goodbye.